This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. At Cincinnati Magazine, local historian Greg Hand, author of the blog Cincinnati Curiosities, revisits a trio of historically significant events in the Queen City. He joins us now on the phone. Greg, thank you so much for being back with us.
Always a pleasure. Good to hear from you.
Indeed, it is always a pleasure. I'm curious, did Cincinnati Magazine decide to explore some tragedies and some disasters that took place here and thought you were the guy who could drum those up?
I was happy to play a small part in actually a wonderful package that they put together. They really responded to a lot of the activity going on in Cincinnati today with a full issue devoted to how Cincinnati faced disasters in the past and how they recovered. And in the middle of that, they looked at five past disasters, and two of them were right in my wheelhouse, the 37 flood and the 1884 courthouse riot.
And I want to talk about the 37 flood first and then get into the 1884 riot, which I didn't know about and was fascinated in reading your account of it. I was also struck by, you know, look, we've all seen these images of the 1937 flood. We've seen around town some of the historic buildings have these markers on them of how high the water might have gotten in that period of time. But there was talk in the years well before that flood actually happened on how we can prepare for it. And the preparation really didn't appear to be that good. Is that right?
Exactly. It's one of those cases where you really need political will to get things accomplished. The 37 flood wasn't the first flood that we had here. There were floods throughout the 1800s. There were floods in the early 1900s. And the city plan from the new charter commission reform government said, we've got to avoid these floods, and here's how to do it. And nobody really did anything.
And so the 1937 flood is, of course, history now. We're talking more than 80 years ago, and there aren't a lot of people who can share firsthand accounts of it. We are currently living through a crisis that in many ways could be worse than this. So we were here as COVID arrived. And one thing that your article about the 37 flood, Greg, struck me with was thinking about what it must have been like in those moments as the water started to rise. Again, we've all seen these photos, you know, the aftermath and the destruction that followed. But what was happening in those moments as families in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky were starting to see this rain come down on what was known as Black Sunday?
This is one of those situations where the pastness of the past really comes into play, because we have minor floods these days, even with all of the precautions that we've taken. But back then, in 37, you have to remember, there wasn't a good weather report, you know? A lot of the things that we rely on for communication and that were put in places that were very flood prone. You know, so when you build a telephone system in a city that is already built, you need to put the equipment someplace, and the good parts are already taken. So the telephone equipment is down in the valleys. And so as the weather was coming in, as the conditions were falling into place for what amounted to be like a thousand-year flood, the sort of flood that only occurs every thousand years, it wiped out communications almost immediately. It wiped out transportation. You couldn't get food. You couldn't get drinkable water. Cities as far away as Cleveland were sending trucks with water to Cincinnati because you couldn't get water. There was very little electricity in town, but that electricity that was available kept failing because of the flood. People were told that they could keep a radio going and one light bulb. And that's what it was like, huddling in the dark, hoping for any sort of news that this was going to pass by. And it didn't only affect the places where the water was. All of the hilltop areas were inaccessible. You couldn't drive to them. The streetcars couldn't get up to them. You couldn't get to work. It really paralyzed the entire city.
And it was in January of 37, and we know what January feels like around here, so it was also brutally cold.
Exactly. In fact, the brutal cold contributed to the flooding because as rain alternated with snow, as snow melted, the ground was frozen. And so the rain just washed off. It was like raining on a sheet of glass. And so the ground could not absorb any of the rain. The cold really contributed to it.
And we're talking with local historian Greg Hand, who has a series of articles for Cincinnati Magazine exploring how this community responded to historic crises from the past. So what did we learn back in 37?
Well, the political will that was absent in 1925 sort of came roaring back. And within a year, the broad outlines of a remediation plan were kind of put in place. World War II interrupted it. The Great Depression made things difficult. But by and large, within about a year, the Cincinnati area came up with plans that, in fact, we are still implementing. You know, if you're down at some of the riverfront parks and you look toward the city, you look into a lot of garages. You know, the whole Banks project is built on top of garages, and those are basically useful stilts. You know, garages are the sorts of things where if we did have a good-sized flood, they could flood the garages, leave the debris behind, but those are structures that can pretty easily be cleaned out and be put back in use, you know, almost right away, and that was part of the original plans right after the 37 flood, is to get the riverfront development, which, if you look at the old photos, this is the whole wholesale business of the city, warehouses, shipping, all of that was in areas that would have been flooded and that are now built on stilts in the Banks project.
Greg, one of the other... Well, please, go ahead.
Yes. The other thing is that the waterways that contributed to the flood were tamed by putting these containment lakes out there. So East Fork Lake, that far out, Winton Woods Lake, those lakes were built to hold waters back so that they wouldn't flood the Ohio River.
And we're talking with Greg Hand, local historian, who has a series of articles in Cincinnati Magazine about past disasters in the Cincinnati area and the region's response to them. Let's go back to 1884, Greg. This was a story I really wasn't familiar with. A riot at the courthouse in Hamilton County. 56 people dead, nearly 300 wounded. I want to read a little piece of it. Quote, "The spark that ignited 3 days of rage was a jury, almost certainly bought and paid for, that returned a verdict of manslaughter in a sensational homicide case for which abundant evidence, including a signed confession, clearly supported a judgment of premeditated murder." Greg, tell us who these characters are.
Yeah, the basically, there were two teenagers, 18 and 19 years old, who worked for a livery stable operator in Cincinnati. And this guy flashed a bankroll a lot. He made bets on things, and he'd always get out his bankroll and flash it. And so these two teenagers got the impression, you know, they could be on Easy Street if they could only get that bankroll. And so they murdered their boss, and brutally murdered their boss. and just displayed a very cavalier response. They left his body in a rented carriage while they went out drinking on the money they got from it, that sort of thing. And it was so obvious from witness statements and the evidence of the corpse itself that this was premeditated murder. One of the young men belonged to a family that was fairly respectable and owned a grocery store, so they had the money to hire an attorney with some reputation, and that was T.C. Campbell, who was part of the political machine running Cincinnati at the time. And the way Campbell won his cases was buying juries. He picked jurors that he knew were in financial difficulty, that sort of thing, and basically said, vote this way and you get $10.
And so thousands of people, after this jury verdict was returned displeased, thousands of people go outside and they lit the courthouse on fire.
This started, the riot started with very respectable people, doctors, commercial presidents of Cincinnati, General Hickenlooper, who ran the gas works, called a meeting at Music Hall to protest a verdict of manslaughter in what was obviously a premeditated murder case. And we're trying to basically co-write a strong letter to the editor complaining. But the crowd was having none of it. Every time somebody mentioned the jury, cries of hang him were ringing out in Music Hall. When the crowd dispersed, when the speeches were over, someone on the way out the door said, onto the courthouse, we're going to burn it down. And that's what they did.
And ultimately, and dozens of people were killed in this thing.
Oh, yeah. The rioting was so bad that a regiment of National Guard took a train into Cincinnati from Dayton, got out, marched up to the scene of the riot, decided this was out of their control, turned around, and marched right back to the train. A second delegation of National Guard showed up. They brought Gatling guns, the primitive machine guns, and it was Gatling guns fired directly into the crowd that killed many people. And in fact, a number of innocent bystanders who just happened to be walking by were killed by the fire from the militias.
I was really shocked to see this piece that you included in your writing, that Victor Hugo, the famed French novelist, had something to say about what happened in Cincinnati. He wrote a letter to Cincinnati Literary Club, and according to your reporting, he wrote, quote, "The rioters of Cincinnati inaugurated the era of glorious revolution. They were champions of justice. They were more than champions. They were heroes. They were more than heroes. They were men. The world says so. France says so. And I say so." It's quite a remark from someone so well known throughout history.
Yeah, and what he was responding to really was the environment in which this misguided jury verdict took place was total corruption in Cincinnati. There was a Democratic party-run political machine in Cincinnati. One of the ringleaders, in fact, was the editor of the Cincinnati Inquirer, John McLean. And what Hugo saw was citizens rising up to throw off this corrupt government. And within a year after the riot, that machine was largely voted out of office.
And you can read Greg Hand's stories, and there's much more to all of these at Cincinnati Magazine. I just want to do a quick tease. You can also read about the last days of Cincinnati's notorious Noodle Factory Saloon. Well worth your time as well. Just Google Greg Hand in Cincinnati Magazine. You'll see it there. Also, Google Cincinnati Curiosities, and you'll see his fantastic blog with little nuggets from history throughout. Greg, thank you so much for the time you gave us today. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.